Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
What's happening in Washington and how it affects you? Tony and Melissa in the morning. Welcome Congressman Jim Himes to WICC 600.
Congressman, we welcome you here on this Friday. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes out of your busy schedule. I hope all is well.
You bet, Tony. Well, I can't say all is well. Obviously, our community continues to get pounded, and we're at a point now where pretty much everybody knows somebody who's been lost to this virus. But, trying to keep it all together and trying to do what we can to get Washington to make some agreements on, the next bill for this for the relief effort.
Okay. Can you give us a little bit more on that? I mean, where do we stand as far as that goes?
Yeah, well, there is some good news out there, right? I am told that there have been as many as $80 million direct deposit payments made to people. This is the $1,200 payment that people making under $75,000 a year, all people, by the way, with Social Security numbers making under $75,000 a year, should have received. That, of course, depends on the IRS having their banking information, their direct deposit information. And by the way, if the IRS doesn't, because you didn't give it to them on a tax return, you can go to irs.gov right now and fill out a little form online that will ask for identifying information and your banking information, and you will get a direct deposit, which is important, Tony, because checks are going to take a lot longer to go out the door. So that's the good news. Bad news, of course, is that one of the big programs, the forgivable loan program for small businesses, ran out of money yesterday morning, and that was $350 billion that went out the door. So right now there is a negotiation ongoing in Washington, and my hope is that negotiation clears up today so that we can vote through another big slug of those funds that have been really helpful in helping a bunch of our small businesses. We need to do a lot more, and that deal, I hope, gets struck today.
Wow. Can you give us the latest, Congressman, on testing? We know that there is a national shortage, but any idea as to when we'll see testing here?
Yeah, well, when I last looked, which I think was yesterday at lunchtime, Connecticut had undertaken about 53,000 tests, which is a lot better than where we were 4 or 5 weeks ago, where it was hard for anybody to find tests. So as I talk to hospitals and community health centers and firefighters and police officers, I'm hearing now that that it's a lot easier to get a test than it was. There's more locations, but the problem, Melissa, is we're still not nearly where we need to be to start thinking about reopening the economy and lifting some of the restrictions that we're all living under right now. I continue to urge not just the federal government, but the state government, and of course the manufacturers of these tests, companies like Abbott, to really crank up their production, because we're not where we were 5 weeks ago, where it was almost impossible to get a test, but we still don't have nearly enough for us to think about reopening once our number of cases begins to level out and decrease.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Abbott, because there have been reports that Abbott testing isn't actually as accurate as we thought it was going to be to test for antibodies. Have you heard anything more on that? And do you know if there's anything kind of happening more to have an effective test that people can start using to see if they were infected?
Yeah, I don't know a ton about the Abbott test, because that's been recently, Stanford Hospital, Norwalk Hospital have that gear. But I don't know a lot about that particular test. I do know that the nasopharyngeal, that's a big word to say before you've had a cup of coffee, the nasopharyngeal, which, by the way, is a fancy scientific speak for they stick a Q-tip way up your nose, that test actually has some real problems associated with it, because it is a very physical test. They need to rub this swab back around in the back of your throat for a while, and then how you handle that swab makes a difference. I know that's not a perfectly accurate test. And, that's a serious issue, Melissa, right? Because if you end up getting a lot of false negatives, so a false negative set means that the test says you don't have it, but you do. Okay, now you go back to your community, you go back to your family, and you're spreading this thing. So I'm not super up on the epidemiology of this thing, Melissa, but I do know that they are working to try to make sure that we have not just more tests, but better tests.
Congressman Jim Himes is here with us, his weekly visit on a Friday. Sir, the president introduced a two-phase plan to start getting people back to work. What do you envision for Connecticut to do this correctly?
Well, there's a super simple answer to that question. And, you know, I think the White House plan had a bunch of really good ideas in it. I was glad to see that the president came off this idea that he could just start ordering states to open for a whole bunch of reasons. You know, those of us who follow this stuff know that these restrictions have been put in place by governors, and the president doesn't have the authority to countermand a governor's order. But the reopening plan the White House put out yesterday had a bunch of good ideas, including the notion that, you know, you really need to see a couple of weeks of improvement before you can say the improvement is truly a trend, right? And, you know, again, I'm not a scientist, but I listened to enough of them to know that we need a lot more tests, what we were just talking about. And we actually need to see our hospitals operating below capacity, right? I talk to our hospital CEOs pretty much every day, if not every week. And, you know, as long as they are really feeling stressed because their emergency rooms are full and their ICUs are full, you know, it's going to be hard for us to get back to normal. But there's a super straightforward answer to the question that you asked, Tony, which is, you know, the way we get there quicker is by not taking our foot off the gas pedal right now, you know, continuing to do the things like staying at home and washing our hands and being really, really careful when we go to the grocery store. That's the reason we're starting to see some improvement in parts of the country. And if we let those restrictions go prematurely in the name of trying to get the economy restarted, we'll do exactly the opposite, right? We'll bring about a second wave. And that second wave will force us right back into our basements, and that's obviously not something we want.
And, Congressman, I know just as a parent, this is, and I know you're a parent, so I've got to imagine that you would think of something like this as well. I know we're very focused on the economy for obvious reasons, which completely makes sense. But to be honest, I don't know how parents could feel comfortable until there's a vaccine available to send their kids back to school. Really, forget the rest of this semester. I mean, even in the fall, you know, it's interesting. Boston University is one of the first that said they may not send students back on campus until January of 2021, until there's a vaccine. And people think, oh, that's terrible. Think about it. Ideally, do you really want hundreds of kids or thousands if it's colleges? Do you really want kids to be back in close quarters, not practicing social distancing? I mean, ideally, from your perspective, do you really think parents can send their kids back to school even if we open up the economy?
Yeah, it's a great question, Melissa. And, you know, I saw what BU said. Look, the reality is that none of us, you know, this is new. We've never lived through anything like this. So there are going to be surprises. And, you know, hopefully there'll be some surprises on the upside. Maybe there will be a therapy developed or a vaccine developed more rapidly than we think. It's also possible. And by the way, I know that this is going to happen. You know, we're not coming out of this thing on a Monday and Tuesday everything's normal, right? This is going to be a phased opening. Mm-hmm. And you're right. As parents, we worry about our kids. But Melissa, there's somebody we worry more than we worry about our kids. I mean, it turns out young people, you know, really, there are examples of young people having really tragic outcomes. But of course, this is a huge problem for our senior citizens. If you look at the fatalities that we've had in Connecticut, you know, a huge number of them have been in our nursing homes and have been in that population that is over the age of 65. So, you know, yeah, of course, as parents, we worry about our kids, but we can't possibly be back in a world where you know, where our grandparents are at deadly risk because, you know, they're going into grocery stores where people aren't following good practices and stuff. But, yeah, you know, Melissa, as a parent, right now, I got two girls at home right now, and, you know, I'm working so hard to sort of impose a little structure. You know, we're doing a thing where we ask them to cook dinner, you know, in a rotation. We're encouraging them to get out to get exercise because, of course, you know, you need them to keep their spirits up too. And, you know, our young folks, our kids haven't ever experienced anything even vaguely like this. So, yeah, you're right. It's a worry.
Congressman, today is the last day for people to enroll for insurance through Access Health CT. Is there any idea if Access Health has ramped up more hands on deck to take these calls? I mean, we know the calls will probably be flooding in today.
Yeah, good question, Tony. I have not heard that there's been a problem processing applications. That doesn't mean it didn't happen. I tend to get those complaints sometimes if there is a problem. But you're good to highlight that because obviously this is a moment in time where somebody who doesn't have insurance, given what's happening out there, it would be a really good idea to sign up for that insurance. But I'll keep my eye on that. You know, as you know, the governor extended the sign up period. And I suppose if we encounter difficulties today with just not being able to process those applications, might be worth a call to the governor to extend it again. But I'll have to look at those numbers.
And Congressman, I know that you had mentioned it in the beginning of our session with you that people can go to IRS.gov. They want to fill out their information so they can get direct deposit. In the midst of us in our commercial break, we got a listener who wrote in asking about seniors who are living on Social Security. Is there anything necessary that they should be doing to make sure they're getting their stimulus money in a timely fashion? If they're not, you know, computer savvy or anything, is there a way that they can get their checks if they are eligible to get them? And do you know how long the wait time is for them to get their checks if they wait in the mail?
Yeah, great question with a very simple answer. The good news is that if you're receiving Social Security, either Social Security traditional insurance or disability insurance, you don't need to do a thing because the government is already sending you money in that channel in that way, and they will use that channel, they will use that way to get you your $1,200. So folks that are receiving money from Social Security don't need to do a thing. And I would suggest that if they, if another week or two goes by and they actually haven't seen a direct deposit pay, or, however it is that they get their Social Security money, that they consider contacting the IRS through their website to track the status of their payment. But and by the way, I'll say it again because it's important. You know, the federal government is limited in the number of checks it can send out. I mean, I guess it's just the printing press, right? Can only print 5 million of these things a week. So because the government expects to have to mail out as many as 80 million checks, if you do the math in your head there, and by the way, they're going to do it in income order, lower income to higher income. So, and I think that's the right way to do it, obviously, because people who are making less money, that money is that much more important to them right off the bat. But if you do the math in your head, if the IRS needs to mail you that check, you know, it could be a couple of months before you get it. So if for some reason, any reason, the government is sending you a check, regardless, if the government is sending you a check rather than sending you money directly to a bank account, now is the time to go on IRS.gov and give them that banking information so that you can get your money faster.
Congressman, we have run out of time, but we do appreciate your time. And I, for one, look forward to the day where you're calling in on a Friday and we're just talking about usual problems.
Yeah.
You know? I agree with you. You know, we can complain about the baseball or something.
Yes, there you go. Exactly. I would like that.
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you so much, Congressman.
Right.
We'll talk to you next week.
Guys.
Tony and Melissa, in the morning, we are, of course, talking about COVID-19, and we're going to check in with Governor Ned Lamont. He'll be joining us live on the line. I do want to let you know the latest check at cases that we saw yesterday. We are just shy of 16,000 confirmed COVID-19 cases in the state. We also have lost 971 victims to this horrific virus at this point. But some good news, the governor shared during his press briefing yesterday that we only saw 18 new hospitalizations. That is the lowest number we have seen in weeks. And the governor, of course, says this is a trend that is going in the right direction, which is great news. In fact, speaking of the governor, he joins us live now on the air. Governor Lamont, we are so glad we could have you here. We're so sorry we missed you on Monday. How are you?
Hey, Melissa. We're doing good. Look, that hospitalization trend is really important because that's the best way, I think, to tell what is the overall level of an infection, because we only test a small minority of people out there. But folks going to the hospital, A, tells us something about infection, and B, tells us about capacity in the hospital. So when that's trending down, it spiked up yesterday a little bit, but when it trends down, that means we're on the right track.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we just got an email from your office just a few minutes ago, which was pretty exciting stuff. The first rapid COVID-19 testing center opening up in New Haven through a partnership with CVS Health, which we were expecting from your announcement last week. So that's exciting. But we do have a couple of questions on this before we get started. First of all, it says that you're using Abbott testing, which reports have said, and we actually just had Congressman Himes on the line about an hour ago, And during our show, he even said the nasal tests, they may not be as accurate. People are going home with negative test results, but they're still infecting their families. So, first of all, how can we feel confident that these tests are working? And then do we have enough tests and manpower to even do 750 tests a day, which is being suggested?
Two good questions. Number one, it's probably as good a test as we have right now. Is everything perfect? Absolutely not. But this is the opportunity with the CBS Abbott Lab test to get you a quick response. We're going to primarily focus first off on our first responders. They get the first 100 tests every day. Make sure our nurses, our firemen, our cops, our all of whom interface with people every day, interface with patients in some cases, we know that they are COVID-free. Is the test perfect? Far from it. But it is, it's evolving and getting better every day.
What is the
second question is, yeah, that's great. You've got the equipment to do it. Do you have all the kits? Do you have all the agents that you need, reagents? And CDS has a very strong relationship, so I think they'll be able to get most of the equipment and agents that we need. But it's been hit or miss, as you know, around the country, because every once in a while a hospital will run dry and the testing goes down for a period of a day or two.
Mm-hmm. And actually, before, I don't mean to cut you off, Tony, but it just speaking of the Abbott testing, I just know personally in our house, and I've heard from other listeners, Governor, that you know, if you had COVID-19, like you're pretty sure you had it. I know my father, for example, we are pretty sure he had it in January, but there was no testing at the time when he got terribly sick, and he's since come home. But I know he is very eager to find out if he's got the antibodies, if he could donate blood, if he can go back to work at some point. Is this something that you can just apply or you could go online to find out if you can get the test done, or is it something that you got to wait for your primary doctor, if you have symptoms, things like that, or can you just voluntarily go and get the test done?
I would certainly check with your primary care doc. In your dad's case, I think you for sure they'd get you a permission slip. I think Yale, New Haven, Stanford, or at least two of the hospitals that are doing the antibody testing. It's not widely available at this point, and there are a variety of different companies out there. Not all of them have the FDA approval, by the way. So, again, it's, you know, we're building the airplane while we fly it. But I think your father should go out and get that test and work that through his doctor.
We're speaking with Governor Ned Lamont. Sir, what is the latest on testing? The advisory board is relying a lot on their reopening plans on test results, but we don't have them available right now. So how can they move forward with a May 20th opening date?
Yeah, Tony, we talked to Jackson Labs. They're ready to ramp up to 10,000 tests a day over the next couple of weeks. There are a variety of other private labs and university labs and hospital labs that give us the capacity to you know, greatly accelerate how much testing we do. But as Melissa was saying, you know, there are some problems getting – there's a supply chain for testing, just like there's a supply chain for jet engines. You got to make sure that each of the pieces are in place. I think we're getting better at this every day, we as a hospital system and a testing system. But that's why I've said, you know, by May 20th, we're going to have enough testing and we're going to have enough protective gear that we can make some decisions about the future.
Governor, I asked this question to Congressman Himes, and I would love to get your input on this just because I know as a parent, my son, thankfully, is a toddler. He's not in school yet, but I have plenty of friends who have kids, elementary, middle school, you name it. But until a vaccine is available, how can parents honestly feel comfortable sending their kids back to school? I mean, even if things do reopen, you reopen the schools in June, let's just say, or even the fall for that matter, do we really expect families to send their kids back knowing hundreds of kids are all going to be in these close quarters? You really can't practice social distancing in the walls of a school. So do we really expect families to send their kids back knowing that that could ramp up the cases very quickly before we have a vaccine?
That's an excellent question. Look, the vaccine could be a year away. And I'm not sure that we can stop everything until we have a vaccine, because only when we have a vaccine and everybody uses it will we know that we have got this virus licked. But in the meantime, with more extensive testing, for example, in the schools, make sure The teachers are tested. The teachers have the masks. The kids, while they can get infected, are obviously much less likely to suffer any complications, but they can bring the infection home, as you point out, Melissa. So that's why we're being very careful about how we reopen. There are parts of the state that have very, very low infection rates at this point. And that's what we're tracking to see what we can do with schools, perhaps on a regional basis.
Governor, we're taking some listener questions on Facebook. Kathy asks, what about speeding? Since less people are on the road, she noticed people speeding on highways. Are there any plans to double fees or crack down on reckless driving?
We should let me talk to our state police about that. The good news is that accidents are way down because there's much less driving going on. But I hadn't focused on the fact that those people who are driving maybe are going too fast. So I will say I noticed on your traffic report, I was sort of interested in two things. You know, one, they said due to road work, there's been a couple of slowdowns. We haven't heard that in a while. But it's worth noting that we're able to do our road work much faster at much less cost because we have so many fewer cars. You know, we can close down a lane where before we couldn't do it. And the piece I thought was interesting was the Port Jeff Ferry. Head over to Long Island and relax. And I don't think that's such a great idea just because right now Long Island has got a lot of infections going on. And Cuomo and I are both sort of emphatic on the stay at home. So think about that one.
I totally agree. I think with the Port Jeff Ferry, I know, you know, even just getting on the Port Jeff, I mean, I love it and our family certainly frequents it a lot. But I think even just getting on there, if you are, I would just sit in your car. I wouldn't even get on, I don't think, and hang out and congregate up top. We have another question here from Sandy. It's actually a two-part question, Governor, and it's about the unemployment system, which we were very excited to hear yesterday that they've already had 60,000 claims done in those overnight hours, which was awesome. I mean, very cool to hear. Since those upgrades were put into place, Sandy asks, how long do people wait to find out if their application got lost?
I think we're sending out emails to folks if they let's say 15% of the folks didn't fill out their application appropriately. I think that's generally the bigger problem compared to getting lost. But as you pointed out, we processed well over half of those 350,000 claims. 350,000, think about that. You know, we have, 1.5 million people working, so that's a big percentage. And we're going to have the rest of those claims processed in less than a week. That's good news. It's retroactive. So if it took us longer than it should have, which it did, at least it's retroactive to the first pay period when you're due. But if you're a gig worker, you're a sole independent contractor, it's taking us a little bit longer because we don't have the federal regulation on that yet.
And then the other part of Sandy's question was anyone who filled out what he's calling a freelance type of application. He says if claims are rejected, but under new rules should have been approved, how do we appeal?
Yeah, that's the very group I was talking about, the freelance, the independent contractor. Those rules are coming out, you know, today, Monday, by the feds, allowing us probably it's going to take another 10 days, perhaps, to get the system in place so we'll be able to process those freelance worker claims. So I apologize. That's taken so long, but it is a brand new program. We're starting up from scratch, and this is true of 49 other states as well.
All right, a few more minutes here with Governor Lamont. Governor, I noticed personally that face masks are working at grocery stores in Stamford. It seems that every place at the grocery store, most people have a mask on. But people don't seem to adhere to the lane direction signs, and everyone is on top of one another, it seems. Is more being done or being addressed to manage social distancing at places like grocery stores?
Well, yes, we have we're coming out with the executive order probably today.
Oh.
That you wear a face mask, a surgical mask, a cloth mask, not the medical, if you're a grocery store worker or you're going into a grocery store. There's just too much person-to-person contact there. We're limiting the number of people that can go into a grocery store for reasons you understand, social distancing. Most of our grocery stores are giving a special hour just for seniors since they're the group that's absolutely the most vulnerable. That's first thing in the morning, say 6:30 to 7:30. So those are things that I think people are taking seriously. And in the rare cases where they don't, we get notified about it. We stop by and tell them to take it seriously.
And our last question, Governor, actually was a personal question I had about the nursing home numbers. So we did see the new release of the numbers. I know that in your press conference yesterday, you had mentioned that the first COVID-19 recovery center has opened up in Sharon. We know the second one is set to open in Bridgeport. So any idea when that's going to open up? But also, we've seen the cases, as you know, ramp up in Bridgeport. It's now the second highest with the most cases in Connecticut. It's still a good idea to have the COVID-19 recovery center in Bridgeport, or do we go to an alternate site where
we go to places where we can access. These are facilities that were not occupied, and we can upgrade them very quickly so that if you come from a nursing home, you go to the hospital, you have a hospitalization, you don't need to be in the hospital any longer. We let you go to a COVID recovery center. It's safer for you and safer for everybody who's at the old nursing home.
Governor Lamont, we've run out of time, but we thank you so much for taking a few minutes, and we'll talk to you again on Monday.
Thanks for what you're doing, Tony and Melissa. Take care, everybody.
We are joined this morning by Lieutenant Bob Smith. He's with the Fairfield Fire Department. Good morning, Lieutenant. It's a pleasure to have you here this morning. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
We're doing okay. We wanted to check in to see how Fairfield firefighters are holding up with the pandemic. Has anyone tested positive in the department?
We do have one member that's tested positive, and we have a couple of other that are in quarantine awaiting their test results at this time.
Okay. And how do you handle it? When you guys go out there, things must be a little bit different now when you go to a fire.
Mm-hmm. Fires are pretty much the same. Medical calls and things are a lot different than they were a little over a month ago. We're wearing a whole different personal protective equipment ensemble, you know, gloves, goggles, masks, you know, sometimes gowns, depending on what the call calls for. But that's way different than we were doing business a month ago.
But now, Bob, we know that you guys are a lot of times all at the department. You're all kind of hanging out, and I'm saying hanging out, waiting for calls. But a lot of times you guys congregate, you have meals together, you're a family, so you're there together. So I have to imagine that this pandemic has kind of changed the way things are. I know just up the street from you, where the Fairfield Police Department is, they're not even allowing officers to walk into the department. They've got to go right to their cruisers, do their calls, and then come back and basically go home. So how have things changed for the department there, and people just kind of congregating and hanging out?
Yeah, that's true. We've changed drastically how we're handling the social distancing issue in the firehouse, and currently our folks are required to wear a surgical mask 24/7 while at the firehouse. So when you come to work in the morning, you're given a new mask for the day, and you wear that mask and all day long into the night. The only time you're taking it off is when you're using the facilities or you're eating. But even eating, we've changed the way we do things here. We're not cooking our meals together, or if we are, you know, people are eating in separate rooms, definitely keeping at least a six foot distance from everybody. So it's certainly changed the dynamic of how we handle things in the firehouse.
That's got to be hard, because you guys are like family, you know. That's got to be real hard.
It's different. I've been here 24 years, and it's certainly taken some getting used to, but you know, we're trying to do our part to make sure we're keeping our people safe and keeping the public safe. And you know, part of that whole social distancing thing is to actually keep the social distancing. So hopefully it's working out on the public, and we're certainly trying to keep our folks safe here in the firehouse while they're working.
Bob Smith is here from the Fairfield Fire Department. How are the calls going? Are you finding, you know, people are off, the kids aren't going to school, everybody's home. Are you finding that you're taking more calls and seeing more emergencies?
Well, we've actually reduced our response profile on a lot of calls. You know, we're still responding to major medical emergencies, life-threatening things, and things of that nature. Our call volume is probably down because of our reduction in responses. But we are seeing a little uptick in actual fires because more people are home during the day. Hmm. We've seen a lot of brush fires in the area because people are all cleaning their yards, and sometimes stuff gets away from them. You know, a lot of folks are home using their fireplaces late into the season. We've had a couple of chimney fires. We've been fortunate so far that we haven't seen any major house fires, but I know the surrounding areas, especially the city of Bridgeport, seen a major uptick in fires.
Yeah, I'm I'm glad that you, no, I'm not, I don't want to say I'm glad that you're saying that, but I had kind of been surprised. We've had a couple of other surrounding departments on, and I had sort of expected to see that trend, Bob. I thought that we were going to see kind of an uptick exactly for what you're saying. I know that people are stuck at home, so you're either building fires or you're out in the backyard, and you can't go, you know, places to have these public gatherings. So I was surprised to hear that most other places aren't seeing an uptick in fires, but Fairfield has at least, you know, seen at least some kind of an increase. I couldn't imagine that people are all home right now and we're not seeing any changes.
Yeah, definitely. We've, you know, it's not a major conflagration, but certainly we've seen an uptick in the basic fire calls like that.
All right. Speaking with Lieutenant Bob Smith, Fairfield Fire Department. And you're doing a great job over there. We respect you guys. We learned that firefighters were buying up local restaurants, or I should say buying up local restaurant gift certificates to help restaurants. Tell us about that, and how much have you guys collected?
Our local 1426, our firefighters union, the Fairfield Firefighters Association, decided, you know, we're out in the community. We're a huge community supporter, and a lot of community restaurants support us throughout the year. So as those restaurants were closing down and the folks were being furloughed and sent home, we wanted to put some money back into the economy and let those folks know that we actually care about them as well. So we went out and bought a bunch of gift certificates for various restaurants around town, called it Operation Gift Card, and we've given them to our crews to go out and, you know, get a dinner here, get a dinner there at different places, just to try to keep the economy flowing as little as we can, trying to do our little part for ourselves there, let everybody know that we care, that they're out of work and we're trying to help them out as well.
Yeah, that's really cool. Is there a way that people can follow suit and do or get involved with that, or are you guys already finished and did Operation Gift Card?
No, it's still ongoing, but I, you know, would encourage people to, you know, call up their local restaurants. It doesn't have to be in Fairfield. It could be anywhere or any one of the listeners. Call up a local restaurant and buy a gift card. You could either use it now or you could use it when things open up again. But just by buying the gift card, you're putting a little bit of money into the coffers of the restaurants that are out there now. So I would encourage everybody to do that.
Certainly for a good cause, that's for sure. Lieutenant Bob Smith, Fairfield Fire Department, thank you so very, very much. If people want more information on you guys, if they want more information on what to do in case of an emergency, is there a place they can go?
Yeah, we're on Facebook. We have all the social media, Facebook. We have Twitter. We have Instagram, and certainly the fire department webpage, fdfairfield.com or Fairfield, or Town of Fairfield's website has a link to it as well. You can get to our information from there.
All right, sounds good. Thank you so much for taking the time, my friend, and stay safe.
Yeah, you too. Thank you very much for having me on.